and we are glad to have you with us this morning. Starting off the week here, we have one of our regular core group of guests, folks who've every month now for a long, long time have been here to answer your questions. And the topic, home maintenance. Hank Spies is the guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service. And if you have questions about some home remodeling repair sort of problem, all you have to do is call us. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. I'm sure we'll take lots of questions this morning. We're getting some folks lined up here and ready to go, and we'll take as many as we can. Well, thanks again for being here once more.
Good to be back.
Maybe first we're getting some some callers lined up, and oh, by the way, here, maybe I better do this too. AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Now, we had a question. Someone actually sent it in by fax. And
yes.
Apparently, this is a bathroom remodeling sort of
right.
A
Someone is interested in remodeling a bathroom,
okay.
And the first of their questions is: in replacing the toilets, my options are a regular 1.6 gallon type, which is $60 and up, a Briggs Vacuity Whisper Vac at $148, or a Crane Economizer Pressure Assisted. Which would you choose? Well. The regular 1.6 gallon type, they are getting a lot better. When they first came on the market, very often they had to be flushed twice in order to get rid of the contents of the bowl. However, we've got some pretty good ones on the market now. As far as the other two, I would probably choose the Whisper Vac for the simple reason that the Crane Economizer Pressure Assisted Unit works very well, but it's noisy. You feel like you're going down with it. Now, on previous shows, you recommended not to use tile in the bathroom on walls or floors. Well, I hope I didn't come across as not recommending it on floors. It works fine for floors as long as it is installed over an appropriate underlayment. And generally speaking, that is not wood. It would be a cement board such as Wonder Board, or one of the specially manufactured underlayments for ceramic tile, of which there are two or three brand names available on the market. And I don't have any problem with the use of tile on the floor. I am not fond of tile on a tub surround in that it's too easy for grout joints to crack and then let water in behind, and you end up having the wall tile join you in the tub on one of these days. I speak from experience.
Okay.
However, this writer indicates that they don't like the idea of a multi-piece plastic surround, and they thought marble would be too expensive. Well, if you go to one of the artificial marbles, the manufactured marbles and so on, I don't think it's going to be any more expensive than ceramic tile would be, and it's a lot easier to maintain. You only have joints at the corners, and you fill those with a silicone caulk with a mildew inhibitor in it, and you're pretty much home free. That's what I did on mine after the tile joined me in the tub, and it seems to have worked quite well. But those really are your choices, are the tile, and if you should use tile, it should not be installed over type WR drywall. There is a water-resistant drywall, however, it is not intended as a base for ceramic tile. So the so-called green board. But I would, of the three choices, I would wipe tile off. If you don't like the appearance of the commercially manufactured surrounds, fine. But the cast artificial marble does very well.
Okay, very good. Well, hope that that answers the questions of the listener. We have some other folks here who are lined up and ready to go. And we'll start in Champaign with line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a about 15-year-old ranch house, about 1,500 square feet. I bought about a year ago. And I've noticed that as the seasons change, it has a crawl space with the cinder block foundation all around. I notice as the seasons change, the floors go up by maybe a quarter inch, half inch, enough to be to really feel it as I walk across the living room or the den. And the doors open automatically a little bit during sometimes, and then later on in the summer or in the fall, they stop doing it. So, and I have some cracks, not really serious, but some little cracks. I was wondering how much of this is normal and how much of this, at what point should I worry or...
Well, it sort of depends on what you define as normal. What
well,
is happening?
What I was kind of hoping to get from you.
What is happening is that wood expands and contracts with changes in moisture. And I suspect that your problem is the fact that moisture conditions in your crawl space change with the weather. Now, it may be that in the spring and summer we are getting some dampness in the crawl space. This causes the wood to swell. This will make the doors bind a little bit, throw them out of line so that they would swing shut. In the wintertime, when everything is dried out, the wood comes back to its original dimension and everything works again. All the cracks close up. Basically, it's a matter of controlling the moisture in the crawl space to keep this from happening. And I suspect, is your dirt surface in the crawl space completely covered with plastic?
I believe so, but I haven't checked it really well.
Okay, that's where you start. You go down and check and make sure that all of the, I mean 100% of the dirt surface is covered with plastic.
Okay.
And it's better if the plastic even runs up the walls a little bit. It doesn't have to be taped there or weighted there or anything of that sort. Because any moisture that soaks through the concrete block wall will then go under the plastic rather than on top of it. And moisture under the plastic doesn't hurt anything. It's only when you end up with water on top that it makes a difference. You probably, if things are pretty dry down there, leave the crawl space vents closed in the summertime. Because if you are running air conditioners, you have ductwork down there that is cold, and if we have outside air coming in through the vents, we will get condensation on the ductwork, which will drip off on top of the plastic and raise the humidity down there.
Okay.
So basically, it's a matter of checking to be sure that the crawl space is dry and stays dry, and then your movement should essentially cease.
Would that tend to lift up part of the house? Like, it feels like the floor is about a half inch higher as you walk across it.
Do you feel it when you walk across it? Do you feel like it's buckling down and hitting something?
Yeah, it feels like kind of a ridge. For a while in the summertime, it felt like there was a, or last spring, actually, there was a ridge down the center of the house, and then that ridge went away.
Well,
not much, but...
Basically, there's undoubtedly a wood built-up wood beam down the center of your house, and it's growing also.
Okay.
and we get a difference in movement between the outside of the house where your floor joists are sitting on a concrete foundation and on the middle of the house where the floor joists are sitting on another wood joist that expands and contracts.
Okay, there are two metal jacks supporting the middle. Would it have anything to do with the ground freezing or the actual ground changing height?
No. First of all, the crawl space is warm enough, it's never going to freeze down there. So I don't think so. It's virtually always the wood swelling or shrinking, depending on the humidity and moisture content in the crawl space.
Okay, great. That's a definite answer. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for the call. Hank Spies is our guest this morning from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on our program every month. It's always a Monday, and we invite you to call if we have questions on home maintenance. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. We'll go over to Lafayette for the next caller. This is line 4. Hello.
Hello.
And I believe you say that just any crawl space should be covered with plastic.
All crawl spaces should be covered with plastic.
Any
yes.
kind, clear, white, or black?
Generally, the only time it makes a difference is if we have some daylight getting in through vents or entrance hatches. In that case, you want black. Otherwise, white is fine or clear.
And I suppose insulate the ductwork through there.
Probably not. As long as the exterior of the crawl space foundation, the interior of the foundation around the exterior of the house is insulated, we normally don't insulate the ductwork.
Okay. What can I do for the old concrete driveway? At one joint, it's heaved or buckled up slightly and started to crumble at the surface.
Not a heck of a lot. This just a wintertime phenomena?
I guess so. It's just starting.
Okay. If for some reason or other we got a lot of extra moisture in there, and that could have happened this year with the snow and the melting of it, and then it freezes, the frost will heave it, and it'll go back down as everything thaws out again. Probably there's very little you can do if you have a water going in a construction joint. Yes, there are some sealers that can be poured into that, and that will help.
Well, over the years, I've tried to maintain the pavement with treatments of kerosene and linseed oil, as you've suggested, and elastomeric filler at the joints. But in colder weather, they open up again, and then it's too cold to use the filler again.
Yeah, and it's undoubtedly the fact that there's enough moisture under there that it's freezing and expanding and heaving the things. I've seen the driveways move as much as 2 inches vertically in the wintertime, which is very disconcerting if it does it right in front of the garage door. There really is very little that can be done. The problem is that the fill under the concrete is not well drained. And there's not much you can do about it short of replacing the driveway. So I suggest you live with it.
Okay. Now could I ask a question of more general interest? With the shortages of electric power and blackouts that might sometime come this way, what's your view of portable generators for residential use? Are they worth the money?
It depends on just how often you have outages. Most of the time, they probably aren't worth it. But if we are in an area that has a lot of overhead power lines and there is the danger of an ice storm dropping everything for a week, then sure, it's a very good idea.
Well, it happened 10 years ago, but perhaps that doesn't justify.
That's an interesting question, whether it does or not. Yes, that thing 10 years ago, we had a generator, and by circulating it an hour or two each place, kept about 6 houses from freezing up.
What appliances in the house are run by a medium-priced generator?
Well, you usually can run the furnace. And the refrigeration and minimum lighting. If you want to do more than that, then the price of generators goes up substantially.
Are they safe to use, and I mean safe in themselves, and safe for the appliances and the electrical system of the house?
Well, you have to have a special double-pole, double-throw switch to connect them. This is for the safety of the people that work for the power company, because if you are feeding a house with a generator, and it is still connected to the power company line, you can shock a guy off the pole a couple miles away. So this is why the code requires a double-pole, double-throw switch to be installed when you put in an auxiliary generator. Now, the exception to this, of course, is that if you have something that you can plug in directly to the generator and not use the house power distribution system at all, then fine, you don't need that. But if you do that any other way, you need that double-pole, double-throw switch, so you cannot ever simultaneously be connected to both the generator and the power line.
Are they safe in themselves? I've heard of them catching fire.
Well, they're as safe as your car engine is. Cars catch fire occasionally, too.
Okay. But I gather, then, that at this point you don't consider it a reasonable...
In most municipal areas, no. As we get out on farms where we have lots of miles of power line exposed to various problems, very well may be.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. I would be willing to bet there were generators that were purchased 10 years ago when that ice storm happened that have not run since.
You're probably
right. Or maybe, maybe
occasionally
once or twice. Yeah.
If you don't run them twice a year, we know they're not going to work when you go out to try them.
Well, I think that's the issue with these things. They don't want to sit for years and years without running.
Right.
They're not happy about that. So at least if they're not going to run for the emergency purpose, then every once in a while you got to go out there and you got to run
them. That's right. That's right. Natural gas fueled generators are more reliable in that standpoint than either LP or gasoline generators. And a lot of people have generators in their RVs, and you can hook up. That's how we ran six houses during that week-long power outage. We would pull an RV up to each of the houses, run it the furnace long enough to keep things from freezing up.
And then drive over
to the next one. Yes, it was a royal pain in the neck, but or lower. But at any rate, it did keep things from freezing up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go on here. The next caller will be on our line number two. This is someone in Urbana, I think. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm calling in with regard to some insulation concerns. Obviously, we've had a very cold winter. I live in a gambrel roof colonial, and there is an attic space where the roof slopes going down toward the facing the west, I guess. And there is currently, the house is built in about 1962. In between the rafters, there's what I call batting insulation.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, and I need to indicate that I was struck by the tornado back in, 96 now?
Yeah.
So there are some tears in that. And I'm a single parent, and I guess I've been, I look at it and I think, oh, God, what am I supposed to do? Do I put in new batting insulation? Do I call insulation contractors and inquire about the blow-in kind? I feel very unsure of myself. Like saying I want that kind of person that says, this is what you need to do. And then you say, fine, I'll get the best estimates I can. We'll do it.
Okay. Is there a vertical wall in a ways to fence off your living area on the upper level?
Yes. In other words, you come up the stairway, and as you get to the top of the stairway, there is a door, and you're right, and that leads into the attic space. And you keep Christmas ornaments, luggage,
right.
Who knows what else is there. Things you don't use very often are stored there.
Well, there needs to be insulation in two places. The insulation that's in the rafters is fine. I wouldn't disturb it. But we need insulation in the floor of that attic space. And then we need insulation on the attic side of that vertical wall.
Okay. All right.
And that can be bat-type insulation that you can put up yourself with a stapler or whatever.
Yeah.
The floor insulation depends on how much there is as to whether you want to go buy a bag of loose insulation and a rake to move it around, or what if it's completely floored. Check and see whether there is insulation under that floor or not.
Okay.
If there isn't, you probably will have to get a contractor to blow some insulation in.
Okay, so you'd have the insulation blown into the floor. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, if it is not insulated now. There may be insulation right up to the bottom of the floor now.
It's possible that there is. Now, the other part of this is for the insulation between the rafters, which is, say, become loose, do you just get a staple gun and put that back up, or do you try to put in new, replace that?
I just get out the staple gun.
Get out the staple gun. Okay, now I have one other question that is partially related. I get nervous about this. After the tornado, there had been roofing damage, and there had been raccoons had gotten in, and then my insurance company helped me with this, and we got the raccoons out, and then we got a new roof on the house, and I have a lot of trees around my house, but there are still times at night when I hear noises, and it's like, hello, how could this be? Because my chimney is totally capped with the sort of, I don't know, I guess I call it a fancy capping. It's like a cage thing built around. And I mean, it was like, we're going to make sure you never have a problem again. But I don't know whether I just have like squirrels running around the roof, because I mean, I have trees right outside my
window. There's a distinct possibility it's squirrels running on top of the roof. Sometimes they will gnaw their way in through the wood someplace and get into the attic, in which case you would swear they are running drag races up there.
Yeah. But I've walked all around my property, and I can't see, I mean, my home, and I cannot see any area where you would theoretically be able to get in. But that doesn't mean...
That doesn't mean there isn't one. I have a house right now that has a squirrel problem, and I have not yet found out where they're getting in.
Okay, so what do you do about that? I mean,
The other thing is, I'm wondering if it's really squirrels or whether your trees have grown back to the point where they are occasionally scraping the roof.
If when you hear something clawing, you don't think it's a tree.
Probably not.
No.
Probably.
I mean, I'm being pretty straight.
Yeah. Okay. The only thing I can suggest is if you really think there are squirrels getting in someplace, you'd have to check for evidence of them in the attic space or above the ceiling.
Okay,
or
what would be that? What would you be looking for?
Insulation torn up, this kind of thing. They seldom leave the insulation alone.
Okay, that's where I was concerned about this attic area where there's some tears in the...
Well, I doubt that that's caused by squirrels.
Okay, that's good for me to know. I think that's essentially it. I've been a little bit stymied on that insulation thing because it's like, you know, I just have this picture of people coming out and say, oh, well, we'll just blow this stuff in here. And I don't have any idea whether it will be the right thing or not.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay,
all
thank
right.
you.
Well,
Bye.
Thank you. Let's go to Bloomington for another caller here. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
For some reason, I seem to become interested in high-efficiency furnaces lately.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are.
Yes. What I wondered, does the pulse combustion have any real advantage?
Well, it's one of several systems. I can't claim any tremendous advantage for it over the other 90-plus percent things. It's a little bit different system. The one thing you want to be sure of, if you put in a new high-efficiency furnace that vents directly out, do you have a brick chimney or are you running on metal gas vents?
An old, very old brick chimney. It's a very
All right.
old house.
Be sure that you do not discharge either a furnace into that chimney. It should go on a high-efficiency furnace, should vent directly to the outside with plastic pipe.
I made that mistake once before.
Yeah, and secondly, be sure that you don't leave the water heater connected to that old brick chimney.
Mm-hmm. So I'd have to replace the water heater, too.
Well, at least put a power vent kit on it.
Oh, you can buy those.
Yes.
Okay. I guess the very main reason I thought with pulse combustion was just one less thing to go wrong.
They have not been trouble-free.
Oh, okay.
The early ones have been, for the most part, recalled.
Mm-hmm. So that you're probably just as well to worry about the exhaust fan on a regular high efficiency then.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, we're just about at the midpoint here with this program here. It's our monthly show on home maintenance. Hank Spies is our guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service. And your questions are certainly welcome. If you have some problem and you're just not quite sure how to solve it, You can give us a call, and Hank will advise you. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us, around Illinois or Indiana or anywhere. The signal will travel 800-222-9455. Back here to Urbana for the next caller, line 3. Hello?
Yes, we have some windows that are close to the ground, and they tend to get a lot of rain splashing up against them, and it's caused some rot. Do you recommend capping with that aluminum, I don't even know what you call it, that goes around the windowsills on wooden windows?
Well, if you have it clad in aluminum, be sure that the aluminum goes all the way under the window sash. It should never stop at the storm window. About half of the ones that we see, the aluminum cladding stops at the storm window, and you do not want that. And you probably should replace any rotted wood in the process. Use pressure-treated wood to replace what is rotted.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to clad them for ease of maintenance and to keep them that way, just be sure that the cladding goes all the way under the window sash.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And then we'll go next to line number 4. This is Paxton. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering if there is an effective, durable paint for basement floors.
What are you going to put down there?
What am I going to put down there?
Yeah.
It's my laundry room and
okay. Yes, as long as you properly prepare the concrete, which will probably include acid etching the thing, so that the paint will stick, and then put a concrete primer on and a concrete paint, yes, it should do fine.
All right. So, why do you go to that kind of trouble? What is it you're hoping to do or hoping to
appearance,
avoid?
Ease of cleaning. It gives you a smoother surface to clean.
Okay, but is there if you don't do the proper prep, then might the paint actually not stick and it'll come off?
Good chance it will peel.
I see. Okay,
but yes, it will probably require an acid etch, a muriatic acid type etch, and then a special concrete primer, and then a finish coat of floor paint over that.
Oh, okay. Any concerns about using that if this is a relatively closed space? You is that something where ventilation is?
Well, you want to have
critical?
Some reasonable ventilation. It's not that.
It's not that.
Critical.
It's not highly noxious.
No.
All right. Very good. To let's see. Next caller is line 2. This is Urbana. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering what construction costs for a house run today. On a square foot basis?
Well, your absolute minimum is in the $75 range, and I've seen them go up to $300, depending on exactly what kind of interior finishes you want and the degree of amenities and the size. Actually, in many cases, a larger house will cost less per square foot because you have more area for given wall and roof areas. This type of thing, but when you start adding multiple bathrooms, you can figure about $10,000 per bath. Things add up rather quickly that way. But I don't know of any builder that's going under about $80 a square foot at the moment.
Well, thanks. That gives me an idea.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And to line 1 here, this is Newman. Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I had a question regarding my home. It's a story-and-a-half house, redwood siding, built in the mid-50s. My question is, I have a severe problem with the paint blistering and also getting like little gray-black mold spots on it. I have in the past used power washer and also the Clorox to try to remove the molding, and use real high quality paint, and nothing seems to work very well.
Well, it's probably shaded.
Not totally, no.
Because generally speaking, we have more mildew problems when it's the sun doesn't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more on the north side and where anything that's heavily shaded. Unfortunately, the APA won't let us use paints that really retard mildew growth.
Mm-hmm.
namely lead based paints. That was one of the advantages of lead paints, was the fact that it killed mildew. They do have some special mildew inhibiting additives that your paint dealer can add to the paint that you get. Supposedly, they have some mildew inhibitors there, but there are some more that can be added to it. Basically, the mildew is growing on the dirt that accumulates on the paint surface, so the more it is sheltered, we have a lot more problem up near the overhangs and this sort of thing. Wash the house once a year. Again, with the 1-4 Clorox to water basis, right. And that helps kill it off. As far as the blistering and peeling is concerned, is your house on a basement or crawl?
Crawl space.
Okay, again, we're back to a moisture problem possibly originating in the crawl space.
The previous owner wasn't sure, but he thought when the house was built that the contractor at that time, and I don't know why, but he thought the contractor, before he put this redwood siding on it, painted the inside of the boards before he put them up.
That should help.
That what?
That should help.
Should help.
Yes. The so-called back priming, the painting of the backside of the siding boards, is highly recommended. But it won't help you if you have a major moisture problem in the house. Do you ever have condensation problems on your windows in the wintertime?
Not bad, no.
But you do have some?
Very minimal, I'd say.
Okay. Because it's perfectly possible to blow the paint off with a power humidifier if the humidity in the house is too high, or moisture in the crawl space.
Now run that by me again. What'd you
say? Either moisture in the crawl space,
right,
or a power humidifier, either of which are perfectly capable of blowing the paint right off the house.
I see. The
anytime you have condensation on the inside of a double-glazed window, the humidity in the house is too high.
I don't, in this instance, I've lived in houses where that's been a problem, but I don't think that's really a problem as hell.
Okay.
And are those inhibitors you talked about in the adding to the paint, are they very effective?
Well, it's as effective as we've got.
Right. Okay.
They're not as effective as white lead paint, but they're a lot better than most of the other things we can do.
Well, I just thought I'd mention that about the inside of the boards being painted. I didn't know if that would have any negative effect. But
no, it has a positive effect, as a matter of fact.
Okay. But have you ever run into this similar problem with people having older homes with redwood siding?
Actually, yes, because there are leachates. There are compounds in the redwood that, if any moisture gets to them, will leach out. And this does the staining. You will get brownish stains and so on. Redwood is a durable wood, but it has some of its own peculiarities.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Appreciate your help.
All right. Okay. Thank you for the call.
Bye.
I think that there are most of the commercial house paints that are available say that they do have mildew inhibitors in them. Do you think that they're not quite?
You can probably throw another shot in without hurting a thing.
Okay. All right. Let's go to another caller here. This will be Villa Grove, and that's line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Speaks. Our house faces north, and the roof is black asphalt shingles, maybe 14 years old. And I've been noticing that our roof on the north side and others in the neighborhood seem to have dark streaks. Can you tell me what is causing that?
Again, this is mildew growth.
It's mildew, okay.
And there's a certain amount of dirt that gets on them, and the granules are very good at holding dirt, and the sun doesn't come out and kill the mildew very much. The one thing that you can do that will help minimize this, I won't say it'll cure it 100%, there is a product on the market called Shingle Shield.
Okay.
It is a narrow zinc strip that is tucked under the bottom edge of the top row of shingles.
Okay.
And the acid rain that we have washes some zinc compounds down the roof, and that kills the mildew.
I see. Okay, well, that's a good start. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And what's ballpark is that a terribly expensive thing to...
Not particularly. The hardest part of it was getting up there and putting it on. But no, it's not all that expensive.
Okay. Next is line number two, and that's Homer. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. I have a greenhouse, or a sunroom, I suppose, that I built quite a few years ago. And this room kind of drives us nuts because it overheats in the summertime, and it gets fairly cool in the wintertime. And I'm wondering if there are solar films that could be applied to the inside of the double glazing that might kind of temper the temperature swings.
There are reflective films that particularly... does this have a glass roof, too? Is the roof glass also? Or,
no.
Okay.
No.
There are some films that will reflect and help reduce the summertime heat gain. However, I hesitate to tell anybody to put it on sealed double glass because the pane on which it is applied will get much hotter than the other one, and I've known it to break the seal or actually break the glass because of the difference in temperature. Actually, your best thing is an awning.
Well, it's a fairly large... I've got...
Use some roll-down bamboo splint blinds or something or other.
Yeah, okay. All right.
But that kind of sun shading is about it.
Okay.
If we were putting in new glass, I would get one of the new low-E glasses with the reflective film built into it.
Sure, but that's beyond what I'm
right. Well, I assumed that, so that's why I say, but I hesitate to say to put a film on... if it wasn't sealed double glass, then yes, I've put film on storm windows, for instance. But when you've got a piece of sealed double glass, the stresses produced in the glass by the film and the temperature difference, I'm very reluctant to recommend it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And to line one for another caller here, this is Champagne. Hello.
Hello. I live in an older home, and it has an unfinished basement. The home was probably built in the mid to late 20s, and there's silver paint on the walls. And we've been puzzled, and I wondered if there's any reason why it's silver paint, if that's got special content that might be waterproofing. Basement is absolutely dry. Bought it in 93, and it survived all that flooding without a drop of water in the basement. We're thinking about repainting is why we're wondering what the silver stuff is, if we should try to find more, or what do you say about that?
I have absolutely no idea what the silver stuff might be, but I think you ought to be able to paint over it without any great problem.
Okay. I've seen other in homes for sale I've gone, and I've seen several basements in the neighborhood that are the silver, so we began to think maybe it was some magic compound. One other question around the windows in the basement, the mortar is starting to sort of crumble away with that age, and they're wooden framed windows. Is there some compound that we can replace that with, and any tips on how to do that?
Well, basically, you'll have to go back in with essentially some latex additive mortar and trowel it back in.
Okay. Good summer job, huh?
Right.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Okay. Thank you. We'll go to line three, another Champagne caller. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to ask, for a brand new house, since, as you know, the heating bills have been very high this winter and so on. Would adding a wood-burning stove, the one that you're using, uses pellets, be a good idea in the basement to cut down on the energy cost? The house is pretty well tight, very well insulated, has very high energy-efficient heating system and everything. Just to cut down on heating expense, would a wood-burning stove using pellets types in basement be a good idea?
I wouldn't.
I'm sorry?
I wouldn't put one in.
You would not?
No. Because any time you have a wood-burning stove, we start running into some indoor air pollution problems.
I see.
And since you said that this was a tight house.
Right. It's a brand-new house, 40 years old, very well built.
Yeah. I would not. I'm not even sure that it would save you much of any money on the fuel, because by the time you buy the pellets and so on, I'm not sure you're still not better off buying gas, even at today's ridiculous prices.
I see.
But the problem with indoor air pollution is such that I wouldn't recommend it.
Right. Would you recommend anything as a backup heating, to cut down the cost?
Not really. I don't think there's anything even at its current price rate. I don't think there are any other fuels that are cheaper than gas.
Okay, so just leave it as is.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And let's see, next we'll go to Peoria, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Speaks. Do you have any information on geothermal heating and cooling systems?
Yes. What specifically do you want to know?
Well, I want to know if they're efficient.
Very.
Very efficient?
Yes. Compared to electric resistance heat, we're probably looking at 3.5 to 4 times as efficient as electric resistance heat. I would have to do some calculations based on whatever your local gas prices are, assuming gas is available. But both the heating is much more efficient than electric resistance, and the cooling is probably about twice as efficient as the ordinary air conditioner. However, the initial cost of installation can be pretty high, depending on what your circumstances are.
Well, I understand that the payback time is about 7 years.
That very well may be. I've seen that occur. What is your fuel now?
Well, we haven't gotten our last bill.
No, I mean, what, are you burning gas now?
Oh, yes. We have a brand-new furnace put in here about a month ago.
Okay. Do you remember what its AFUE efficiency was?
It's about 90%. They say.
That's very good. I don't believe that replacing that with a geothermal system would pay off in 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, the geothermal, I'm calling for one of my boys.
Oh, okay.
His furnace is, you know, it's probably 25 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, replacing the furnace with a new high-efficiency furnace would be, is this a rural thing or in town?
In town.
Okay. I question whether or not a geothermal heat pump system would save him money over a high-efficiency 90-plus percent gas.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Would it make a... Say that this was new construction, and so you didn't have to worry about tearing up the yard because you do have to go out there and dig your
You have to dig trenches. Or wells, one or the other.
Would that make a big difference, or you would still say, well, if you're going to have a high efficiency gas furnace, that probably it's not going to.
Well, a lot depends. Do you have gas available? A lot of these are used in areas where pipeline natural gas is not available. And if you are comparing it to other forms of electric heat, or if you are comparing it to propane, it makes a big difference. Generally speaking, on new construction, your installed cost is going to be $5,000 to $7,000 higher than with a gas furnace.
That's a significant amount of money.
That's a significant amount of money, yes. And as I say, if you are comparing it to electric heat, for instance, you're out in the fringes someplace and you don't have gas available, then yes, it probably does pay because, as I indicated, it is 3 to 4 times as efficient as electric resistance heat. And the air conditioning is probably about twice as efficient as the conventional air conditioner. But that's quite a bit of premium to put on it. Now, if you were to say, well, let's factor this $5,000 to $7,000 into the monthly payment on your house, would it save enough? Well, certainly if you have electric heat, the answer is going to be yes. And they've gotten the durability on these things up quite a bit. They used to have relatively short lives, like 12, 15 years. Now it's up over 20. And again, we're not concerned about the wells or trenches here. We're talked about the equipment, and that's not much different than a regular furnace. There's a lot of circumstances in which they are very desirable, but I would be hard-pressed at this point to say that it would compete favorably with a 90-plus percent efficient furnace burning pipeline natural gas.
Okay.
But as the price of gas goes up, Is the price of electricity going to go up too? Probably. So I'm not sure that we have a straight win-win situation here.
All right. Hank Spies, our guest this morning from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Every month he's here. We do these shows on home maintenance. The market's taking the holiday off today, so we will have a little bit more time than usual, maybe about another 4 or 5 minutes, and we'll take as many calls as we have time for. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. If it would be long-distance call, use that. We'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455. Here's someone back here locally in Urbana, line one.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got another heating question. Currently, I have in my house hot water baseboard heat with a gas-fired boiler, and we're doing some remodeling in a part of the house, and we're thinking about replacing the actual baseboards with copper pipes put in between the joists through holes drilled in the joists, and such that they heat the floor. I guess what you have to do in a situation like that then is to put some kind of reflective insulation underneath those pipes so that you get a uniform heat all over the floor. And my question to you is this a good idea? I suppose it's not cost-effective in any real sense, since the alternative is to leave the registers as they are, which is more or less free, and will still do a reasonable job of heating the space. But I guess we want to get rid of the registers. That's the whole reason for doing this, because we find ourselves always wanting to put a piece of furniture in front of the things, those baseboard units. And I guess that's part of the question. The other question is, I understand that this system will only work on tile or carpeting on the floor. Will not work for hardwood floor because of the damage that it does from the heat and cooling to the wood itself. Is that right?
No. I've seen a lot of in-floor heating systems with wood floors over them. However, you have to realize that anytime you put anything on the floor, be it wood, carpet, or whatever, you are insulating the room from the heat source.
Yeah.
The in-floor heating is also much slower to react to changes in temperature.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was worried about. I can't keep my eye on it. You know, when I turn the thermostat on, I want to feel the heat come on, and you just can't do it with that.
That's absolutely correct. Now, as far as putting furniture in front of your existing units,
yeah,
that's probably not hurting anything either, as long as there's a certain amount of airspace between the wall and the furniture.
I see.
It's very difficult to beat baseboard hot water heat. If you were starting from scratch, then I might seriously consider the in-floor heat.
Uh-huh.
To retrofit. It's going to take someone with a lot of experience and a lot of time to calculate just what you need, because you're not going to want pipes in every joist space.
Uh-huh.
So it's a significant calculation problem, and you have to decide ahead of time what the floor surfacing is going to be.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, if you run the water in that system hot enough that it will heat through a carpet and pad, if you go to a ceramic tile bathroom, you're going to get a hot foot.
Mm.
The same is true in the kitchen. Usually we don't have carpet in the kitchen, and the kitchen floor may be too warm to comfortably work on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are systems available that blend the heat. They put various zones and blend the heat, and the water temperature in each zone is different depending upon what the floor surfacing is there.
Oh, I see. Huh.
But as I say, it takes a lot of calculation and design work to do this, and it's something more than just running, tapping into your existing pipes.
Uh-huh. Okay. I see. And to do it for part of the house, that would be okay? I mean, if there were one loop that were part under the floor and part on the baseboards, would that be a bad idea?
Probably would. I would try and keep the floor loop and the baseboard loop completely separate with different controls on them.
Okay. And if we particularly wanted to get that warm floor in, say, just bathrooms, would we be well advised to go with a an electric heater and just take out the hot water heat and run it through?
No. I think you could. Put it in bathroom, some an area that small. You might be able to do that without any major discombobulation of what you've got now.
Okay. But then you'd advise putting it in a separate zone with a separate thermostat.
Yes, I would.
Okay. All right, great. David, I have one more question. Could I ask it?
Well, I got a couple of other people. I'd like to try to get at least one more.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate your patience there. Okay. Let's go to line number two, Champagne. Hello.
Hi. I want to replace some shrubbery in front of the house, and more importantly, I need to do some regrading because the soil is very compacted right against the foundation. And who do you call to do something like that? I don't know. I mean,
probably a landscape firm.
What?
Landscape firm, probably.
Wesky?
Landscape.
Oh, okay. I didn't know whether they know all about how to check the drainage and the.
Well, what you're looking for is a 6 inches of slope away from the house in the first 10 feet.
Okay. Now, there originally were some drainage tiles down there. I suppose they're still there, but
I hope so.
Okay. Thanks. That's basically what I want to know. I didn't know whether there are people that specialized in this and knew something about basements and stuff like that, but.
A good landscape firm should be able to handle it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And we'll go one more Urbana here, line three. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
I have a question about a high-efficiency furnace. Here lately, when it calls for heat, I have like a minor explosion when it takes off. It's, you know, just not firing. It loads up with gas before it fires. Is that a maintenance problem, or is that inherent to a high-efficiency furnace?
It's a maintenance problem.
Okay, it's getting too much gas before it's
right.
Before
some reason or other, the ignition system, I don't know what kind of ignition system you have on it. It's got an igniter on it. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The gas valve is opening before the igniter is hot enough.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, at that, we will have to stop for this time around with the promise that next month Hank will be back and we'll do it again.
Great.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program every month, always on a Monday, to take these kind of questions on home maintenance.